Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, how can the image of Muslims be revived after years of demonization?
Following the events of 9/11, Muslims have been continuously demonized throughout the media, be it print, broadcast, or film. In 2007, research commissioned by the ex-London mayor, Ken Livingstone, found Muslims are being demonized by British media, with 91% of reports found being negative. Only 4% of 352 articles were positive. Real Bad Arabs, How Hollywood Vilifies a People, a book published in 2009, found the vast majority of Arab characters in 900 American films were outright racist characters. While Western media continues with its subtle and at times not so subtle Islamophobic tone, the public blames Muslims for this, claiming Muslims refuse to integrate into society. This week's Islam and Life asks, how can the image of Muslims be revived after years of demonization?
A few years ago, when I met with the previous French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, he was telling me something which was striking. He said, if the image that you have, you Muslims, and he was also talking about, you know, specific public figures, the perceptions are so negative, you have to ask yourself if it's not your fault, your responsibility. And today, when you look at the whole situation in the West, the perception of Muslims is very negative. Some in the West keep on repeating, this is because the Muslims are badly represented, and the attitudes and the behaviors of Muslims within the society are just showing that they are not ready to integrate, they are marginalizing themselves, they are self-segregating themselves. So this is a Muslim, the Muslim responsibility. On the other side, the Muslims and Western Muslims in the West are saying, we are dealing with media coverages that are biased and perceptions that are very negative. We are dealing with political issues that have nothing to do with Islam, and they are presented as Islamic, and it's as if we have an Islamic problem today in the West. And we also are dealing with trends, populists, far-right parties, and sometimes clearly pro-Zionist groups that are targeting the Muslims and changing the whole picture and distorting the very essence of Islam. So between these two realities, who is responsible, and in which way we can revive this understanding of Islam, this better understanding of Islam, what should the Muslims do to change these perceptions and to come to a common agreement, remaining themselves, but at the same time being understood with the people with whom they live? These are questions, critical questions for us to tackle. And to answer these questions, I'm joined by Adnan Rashid, a historian with a speciality in the history of Islamic civilization, comparative religion, and Hadith literature. Thank you so much for being with us. You watched the clip and you heard the introduction. Now, clearly, there is a fact that we cannot deny. The perception of Islam is a bad one. You know, between the 75% of the French people saying Islam is connected to violence, to what the Tea Party and the neoconservative in the States are saying. Even, for example, Colin Powell, when he was talking to the before the first election with Barack Obama, he said, what's wrong with being a Muslim in this country? Because the people are saying the only fact that you are Muslim means that you are problematic for the future of the American society. So there is an Islamic question. The question of Islam is there. Who is responsible? Who would you say, for example, do we have to start by blaming, or do you have to start by trying straight away to look at the state of affairs? What would be your position on that?
Thank you very much for having me, Professor Tariq Ramadan, in this program. This is a very, very complicated question, and the answer is not simple either. First of all, we have to look at the historical precedents. What do we find in history? Historically, Islam was never properly understood by the West, speaking generally about the Christian West during the Middle Ages. Norman Daniel has done a very good treatment of this subject in his book, Islam and the West, Making of an Image. In this book, he gives many examples of Western ignorance of Islam. During the Middle Ages, there was hardly any interaction between the Muslims and the Christian West. And one can easily blame ignorance of the West, because the Western scholars never actually actively sought the knowledge of Islam. Primarily, they were more interested in Arabic language and the works on science coming from the Greeks.
They were mainly talking about the others without really knowing who are.
That's right.
Who the others are.
That's correct. And the perception of the other was very, very distorted at the time. You know, there were so many absurdities attributed to Islam at that time that one can simply not have a list discussed in this short span of time in this program. For that, we have to go to the experts. But then this pattern was kind of broken during the Enlightenment period, when some of the enlightened authors came forward and they challenged some of these old perceptions. But things didn't change because they were looking at Islam from a secular perspective, because their reaction was against the church.
Okay, the church sometimes using Islam against the church by saying you find in Islam better principles than what you are dealing with.
Absolutely, absolutely. Gibbon is one of those people. Edward Gibbon was one of them, and there were others who were writing. For example, John Locke was another personality.
And the English and the French philosophers were both using Islam sometimes to respond to Catholicism.
That's right, including Voltaire. Voltaire, his early perception of Islam was quite distorted. Later on, he changed his view.
Exactly.
We know that from history. So there were a few individuals who were challenging these old perceptions of Islam. But then their view was also distorted because of their secular worldview. They didn't accept Islam as a religion. They probably accepted Islam something, a better monster than Christianity, to put it in simple terms. But then their perception of Islam was purely based upon a secular worldview. They saw Islam as a threat, again, because it's a religion, it's restrictive, it has rules and regulations, and secularism simply promoted separation of church and state, okay, as we know. Then we moved into the colonial period in the mid-19th century, and things didn't change. Again, colonial masters were using a lot of the perception in the East. For example, Edward Said has done a great job on this topic, and he has identified some of the problems there. Now, in today's day and age, we are facing a much bigger problem, unfortunately. Now we are facing neocolonialism. And again, same arguments which were used by the 19th century Orientalists are being used today. There are three areas which are focused upon by the Orientalists, if you like, today. Gender issues, violence equated to Islam, and foreignness. Okay, these are the three major problems we identify with the perception of the West of Islam. So,
what do you mean? You mean the perception of the West of Islam? Islam in Muslim majority countries, or Islam with Western Muslims?
Generally,
the same?
Generally, because Islam, Muslims are never separated from the Muslims in the Muslim world. Whenever there is a problem in the Muslim world, the Muslims in the West always face problems and troubles. Of course, what happened in Iraq, it was directly connected to the Muslims here. And what happened in Afghanistan, somehow Muslims got involved in the West here as well. So Muslims are generally perceived as a backward people, a violent people, a people who do not have any regard for the rights of women. So these are the perceptions we are facing today, unfortunately.
So now, if I look at this, which is quite interesting, all what you said, covering very quickly the historical perspective, and this is very important to remember. Why? Because it's not something that happened after September 11. All this rhetoric, oh, it happened after the violence in the States, that's not true. It's a very, very long history with very deep roots in this perception and this constructing the other. And now we are dealing with Western Muslims, and we are dealing with these three topics or issues or field where Muslims are targeted.
That's
now,
right.
If you have to, and you were saying at the beginning in the Middle Ages, it was based on ignorance mainly, because really even the people who were writing about it, they were not meeting with Muslims at that time. Now we are in a situation which is completely different. We have millions of Western Muslims leaving and in a daily basis interacting with people of other faiths, with their fellow citizens. Mm-hmm. And the situation is the same, the perception is the same. So my question again is, who is responsible? Should the Muslims change, and they are responsible, and there is no smoke without fire, so they are the main reason, or is there something that we have to find in the West as the main reason for that?
That's a very good question. I think there are two issues here we need to identify. First of all, we need to identify the problem. We have identified the problem that this is a long historical process.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not something new. Mm-hmm. Now, why is this happening and how can we tackle this issue? Today we are living in a different situation, as you already clearly stated, that there are millions of Muslims living in the West. And still, the West is very, very, unfortunately, generally speaking, ignorant towards Islam. There are many, many misconceptions spread in the masses by the media. How can we deal with this problem? There are two ways to deal with this problem. First of all, the solution has to come from without, from the Muslim world. Once the Muslims are politically organized in their own regions and their own countries, they can influence the West economically.
Hmm.
The West only understands the language of economics. It's unfortunate, but that's true.
Hmm.
It's an unfortunate truth.
So you would say that the cultural divide is based on economic weakness on
yes.
the side of the Muslim majority countries.
Yes.
This is the reality. Yeah.
Yes, unfortunately. Hmm. Even though we have oil wealth, we have gold, we have all resources one can imagine, but these resources are being controlled by the West primarily. Okay. Once we become independent politically, as well as economically, we will be able to influence the West the way we want to influence the West. Okay, so every time we talk about France banning hijab and niqab, France is doing business with Saudis. And Saudi Arabia is a country which is known for its gender segregation. Right or wrong is another question altogether. But the French, quite hypocritically, deal with Saudi Arabian business people, and there are Saudi business...
That's very true. What you are saying is very true, but still, I would say that if you talk to people, they would say, look, we deal with them because we are obliged to do so, and this is economic. We are having an economic agreement, but... Still, we still think that the situation of women in Saudi Arabia, that it's backward, but all the three areas that you mentioned are there. So this is not changing the perception.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing it. They know that this is hypocritical in any way, but still, it doesn't change the perception of Islam.
I believe this is happening because of the people who are dealing with the French and the West. From the Muslim world, if the political, for example, the presidents and the kings, if they become responsible and if they take active role in changing the image of Islam, it can be changed. The second point is to change the image of Islam internally. What can the Muslims do in the West? There are almost 6 million Muslims in France. According to some estimates, there are over 2 million Muslims in Britain. And this is an amazing opportunity for the Muslims here in the West to present the case of Islam to the Westerners. Now, there is a media blackout when it comes to Muslims. Unfortunately, it's very unfortunate, but it's true. When it comes to sensible Muslims, people who are academically qualified to speak on behalf of Islam, people who can present a good picture, a fair picture of Islam, are simply sidelined. And we have a bunch of bigots representing Islam to millions of people. I don't want to mention names. I'm pretty sure you know the people I'm talking about. There are darlings. There are some people who are darlings of media.
Exactly. Still, you know, I had this discussion with some British journalists or French journalists and say, okay, that's fine. We accept what you are saying, that we need other representatives. First, we want to know them because they are not visible. They're not always visible. They are very, you know, there is something which is the silent majority. It's not talking enough. And then we take people who are vocal, but they are vocal and they are representing something. Why do you want us not to give them the floor as they are, while they are representing something? So what would be your answer to this? You say, okay, they are representing a trend within Islam, and these people are scary.
Right. The point here is that these people are not even a minority within the Muslim community. Mm. You know, to give them the title minority is actually being generous. I don't believe they are even a minority.
Well, they are networks and completely on the margin. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Why are they picked up from the street and they are made to represent Islam on media quite irresponsibly in front of hundreds of thousands of people? And this is the image they're getting of Islam. Mm. On the other hand, we have responsible people, people who are lecturing in universities, people who are academically qualified. They are simply sidelined on major issues of, and people who are qualified to speak on those topics, politics, economics, social issues, gender equality. We have qualified people to talk on these topics, but media simply sidelines them. How can we deal with this problem? Now, the solution.
Sorry. Yes, just before you come to the solutions, if I listen to you, I would say, once again, listening to Adnan, Rashid, the responsibility is the media. It's not the Muslims.
Right.
Would
no,
you say that?
I wouldn't say that. I would actually primarily, I blame the Muslims for their passivity, lack of activity. The Muslims, unfortunately, majority, speaking about the majority, we are very, very inactive people, unfortunately. When it comes to Islam, most of us, we have misconceptions about Islam. Okay, we need to educate ourselves first about our religion, and we need to understand who we are. There is an identity crisis, unfortunately, among the Muslims. Speaking about the majority, of course, there are individuals who are doing a very
good
job.
Identity crisis, what do you mean by that?
I don't think Muslims actually understand what it means to be a Muslim, in the West in particular. Hardly anyone picks up a book and reads as to what their responsibility is towards the people of the West, living in the West, living in a non-Muslim, predominantly non-Muslim society. What are our obligations? Dawah is one of them. I mean, speaking even in academic terms, proselytization is one of the biggest causes, or one of the biggest ways, one of the best and effective ways to undo the Islamophobia we're facing in the West today.
It could be understood exactly the opposite. Lots of people are saying, you Muslims, your religion is an expensive religion. It's all about expansion. So you are here to convert us.
Right. Okay, no, we're not here to, I mean, we can, again, once we educate ourselves, once we study our history, we can go back into our history and actually show the people of the West as to how Islam was spread in the first place. Islam was never forced down people's throats. Mm. There are major academics in this field, such as people like Lawrence I. Conrad, Carol Hillenbrand. Mm. We have Michael Bonner, Fred M. Donner. All these people who are experts on early history of Islam have testified to this fact that Islam as a religion was never forced down people's throats. Mm. Why don't we study? I mean, I've written a book on this topic, on this very topic, to show the world that that's not the case. This accusation is quite old now, and we don't have any ambitions like that. What we want to do is we want to clarify the picture of Islam. We want to put the rational basis for Islam in front of the Western masses.
So before coming to the solutions that you were starting to talk about, just one last question. You said something which is quite interesting. You start being better understood, better perceived when you have economic power. And it's true that the British Muslims, the Dutch Muslims, the French Muslims are very much coming from the economic exile. So they are very poor, modest, and it's a very fragile socioeconomic status. This is what is happening in the society. And we can understand that by being weak in economic terms, they can be targeted in cultural and religious terms. Now you go to the States, and in the States, the Muslims who came from the Middle East are it's another educated, you know, social class with medical doctors, computer scientists, and they have some economic power, and still the situation and the perception is bad. So you can be economically quite powerful, but your perception of the people, now it's even worse than that, because what happened in Europe against Islam with all this Islamophobia is now starting and has started over the last 3 years in the States by targeting Muslims. So is economic power enough?
No, it's not enough. The use of that economic power is very important. How you use the economic strength you have is of importance here. Let me explain. The people who are demonizing Islam, and they're doing it deliberately, quite consciously, they're doing it. What tools are they using? Can we not use the same tools? For example, media is one of the biggest tools they're using. Okay. Do we have any channels? Do we have any news channels, news outlets? Do we tell people how we contribute to the society? All of these issues are very important. The first thing we need to do in the West is, of course, we need to start from the layperson, the layman.
Okay. What are the solutions now?
The layman, what can a layman do? Living in the West, facing a hostile situation, unfortunately, this is not an overstatement. This is the reality we are facing on the ground. If you study how the Jews were treated in Nazi Germany and how they were demonized, is what's happening today against Muslims in Europe. Unfortunately, it's happening. And it's escalating by the day. Where we have head of states actually criticizing some of the basic tenets of Islam. We had a recent example of David Cameron doing a speech in Germany. It wasn't very long ago, where he talked about some of the issues with ignorance, unfortunately. He didn't even study some of these issues himself. So we are facing this situation. What can a layperson do? A layperson can simply go out and speak to his neighbors, talk to them about Islam. First, study something simple about Islam, and then deliver it to the people. So people know that this is not an alien religion. In fact, it's a good thing. Then we come to the professionals. People who are working in offices, people who are doing professional jobs, they can talk to their colleagues. Talking is very easy. Then it comes to business people. Business people can actually invest in media companies. They can come into the media market and start establishing channels, have news channels. And this country, in the West, speaking about Britain in particular, who is going to stop you from doing that? What's stopping us?
So if I listen to you, it's very much about dialogue, communication.
Absolutely.
In a daily life, just neighborhood and just interact with people.
Yes.
It's also in the job market, in the job places and working places. What else? Very quickly, because...
And using that economic strength from without. I mean, if we get some of the supporters from the world, from the Gulf region or wherever the Muslim business people are, to get them to invest into newspapers, become publishers, have our own voice so that people can hear our voice. Of course, I know there's an example about Press TV and it was banned.
But if we have our own voices and it's only us to listen to them, is it going to change anything?
No, it will change things when we have an alternative view, when we have an alternative voice. It will change things. And inshallah ta'ala, I hope that things will change in the future. I know we're facing a dire situation, but I'm very optimistic. When the Muslims become active in their own capacities, things will change. I'm very optimistic.
So once again, it's the last point, which is an optimistic perception of the reality, is to say, still, the Muslims should be much more active in the West and in the Muslim majority countries. And this being active means just to deal with their neighbors, to deal with their fellow colleagues at work, and also something that you repeated a great deal during this discussion is media and covering. It's very important, and the response to some of the trends that we have, it's also to have our own means to spread around another perception of Islam. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
Islam and Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticism on any of the shows you have seen or you would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debate and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Adnan Rashid. Thank you so much for being with us and giving us some views on what should be done to change the situation and the perceptions in the West, but also in Muslim majority countries. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.